Do you want to be the absolute best candidate for a job you'll love in a career with balance? Veteran leadership career catalyst Jonathan Flax is teaming up with leading executive search professionals to provide you with cutting-edge career transition strategies. Welcome to Career Transition Experts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Flax.
All right, welcome. Our guest today is Marty Gilbert, coming to us from Red Sox Nation outside of Chicago. Marty founded the North Shore Executive Networking Group, also known as NSENG, in 2010 by bringing together, it started just five individuals who, like Marty himself, was looking for a job. That's not dissimilar to how the Association for Corporate Growth started, five people having a conversation about an important shared topic. Now, today, NSENG is Chicago's largest job search network with over 6,500 members and 5 or 10 joining every day and 5 or 10 landing new jobs every week, even with we're in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. NSENG provides ongoing job search webinars, online workshops, job search coaching services, and it's a fabulous organization. No fee to join. But all members must have at least 10 years of work experience. So it's mostly managers, directors, VPs, and C-level executives. So founder of NSENG, North Shore Executive Networking Group, welcome, Marty Gilbert.
Great. Well, thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, very good. So just let's start with a little teaser of what people are going to get if they stick around and listen to this conversation. What is the secret sauce? We talked a little bit about the importance of being proactive. What are we going to get into when we get into our conversation here today?
Well, you know, I think, you know, my approach to job search there's a couple basic principles that are absolutely the key. You know, you have to be curious. You have to be willing to be bold. You have to be willing to take chances. You've got to be willing to fail. And when you experiment, it means you're learning things in the process, and some things are going to work and some things aren't. And you're going to gravitate to those that get you to the place where you want to be. But if you're not constantly trying new things, you're going to keep repeating the old bad habits and never get to things that are going to develop into great introductions, key interviews, and ultimately job offers. And so you've got to have this sense of, I'm going to put myself out there and make myself visible.
Yeah, I hear there's a boldness to it. It's quite contrary to what most people get, like a habit, you say. Most people get into just posting jobs online. Talk to me a little bit about your approach to suggesting, like what the heck, what do you have to lose kind of attitudes,
okay,
on things that people can try that are differentiated.
All right. So I'm going to make one small correction. It's not the what the heck. It's actually the what the hell approach to job search. Okay. I hope you can see this on here.
I got it. Okay.
I've actually trademarked it.
And, yeah. Okay, good.
It's a very cool approach because it's rather unorthodox. And the fact is you need to understand that, you know, I am not an HR person who's converted to being a coach. I am a marketer and a sales and general manager who has applied everything that I've learned in my career. And now I'm using that to help people find their next job because 95% of the job search is about marketing. But yeah, the what the hell approach to job search is all about doing things that other people aren't, because we know that 95% of the job seekers spend 95% of their time answering online ads. That's just not a good use of your time. It should never take up more than 15% of your work week. And the fact is that you've got to do things that get around the system. I have so many people that tell me, you know what, the applicant tracking system rejected me in 15 minutes, game over. And I go, no, the moment you hit send, you need to be going around that system, because I've worked with so many people that have been rejected by the system and we've still gotten them interviews because we've gone to the key decision makers. So that's where LinkedIn is a great database research tool. You can find all these people, you can map out an org chart literally in 5 minutes of the right people you want to get to, and you got a message to them either directly or through somebody in your network. And you can't give up, because when you are bold and proactive and actually put together an entire marketing campaign to get the word out on you, you are the product, that's where things start to happen. And you tap into the hidden job market, because let's face it, almost half the jobs out there today are not advertised. These are jobs that people are creating because they are making themselves visible. And that's a big part of the what the hell approach.
Great. That's really powerful. What are some ways in which people can go about that?
I think it starts first. You've got to have a strong target company list. Okay. Without a target company list, you know, there's no focus to what you're doing. And that's where so many people resort to the online ads, and they're letting the online ads, you know, pull them from one job to another. But put together a robust target company list based on your industries and all the companies that fall into those industries. And then you can use LinkedIn and other databases to find the key people in every one of those firms. And now you got to develop that proactive marketing campaign where you're messaging to all of these people, either through somebody or directly yourself. And I can tell you, when you email people directly with a strong cover letter, with a good resume, and you've got a robust, you know, LinkedIn profile, you start to get people that want to bring you in and have an exploratory conversation, you know. And I can tell you, one of the interesting things today is so many people are far more reachable today because we're in the middle of COVID, right? And the fact is, so many people think that there aren't jobs out there. And I've got 10 people every week that are landing jobs. And it's because they're applying a lot of these, you know, principles that break them away from the pack. Because let's face it, there's 200 and more resumes applying to every job today. I don't like those odds. And I tell people, we got to get away from the norm and do things that really create visibility for your background.
Yeah. I read a statistic that 1.5% of resumes that are posted online get looked at. So that means 3 out of 200. And that's kind of right.
And I'll give you one more statistic that's kind of interesting. 70% of all the resumes that apply to a job online are incapable of being read by an applicant tracking system. Wow. And the reason for that, and just for the viewers, is that, you know, the applicant tracking systems are the software that a lot of companies are using, that all these aggregation sites like Indeed and ZipRecruiter and Glassdoor and others are using to decide what are the top 10 or so. And it's all based on keyword matches. But you have to have a specific resume that's compliant with applicant tracking systems. Yeah. And you have to make it compliant to the lowest common denominator. And there's so many things that people have in their resumes that render their resume incapable of being read by the software, because there's underlining, there's italics, there's hyperlinks, and all kinds of things in it that many pieces of software simply, when they get to that point, they go, can't read anymore, so I'm not moving on, going on to the next resume. But the person who applied for that job never knows it. And so I have so many people that tell me, I've applied to 25 online jobs, I haven't heard from one of them. And my first question is, can you show me your resume? And when I look at it, I go, well, you've broken so many rules here. And by the way, they didn't see anything past your name. So yeah, unfortunate.
Yeah, if the ATS systems are kicking out links and people put a link to their LinkedIn right next to their name, That's it. We have a service, and we always make sure to test it with some systems we have that are ATS compliant and, you know, readers. Let's talk about the robust target list. That's a real unique word. You've used the word robust twice in this conversation.
Yeah.
What's like the minimum starting point, and what have you seen people, you know, just in terms of goals and numbers, how many companies would a really wise, proactive candidate, a bold person, as you say, have on their first draft of their company, their target company list?
Yeah, I tell people generally never fewer than 25 at any point in time.
25.
Because, okay? Because some are going to fall off. Everyone that falls off, you got to replace it with two. And so I've had people that have target companies list, you know, over 100, which is perfectly fine. But there are certain jobs that have highly transferable skills, and there are some that don't. Transferable skills come from roles like IT, HR, finance. They can work across a lot of different industries. But I can tell you the job functions that do not have a lot of transferable ability, with particularly if you are coming with 10 or more years of experience, are sales and marketing, and maybe even operations and a few others. Because if they're going to hire you into a manager, director, VP, or C-level role, you better come with that industry experience, because they don't want to have to train you on the industry. They'll train you on the products, the services, the technology. That's their to-do. Right. But they don't want to have to train you on how do we get this person up to speed on what the, you know, the environment's like. So you have to take a target company list and start first at the industry level. So many people have worked in multiple industries. List them all out. Under each industry, now you can do your research on LinkedIn and other databases and find the 4, 10, 15 companies under every one of those industries. And now you've built out a database of, let's say, 50 companies. And within every one of those companies, you have to identify 5 to 7 key people that you want to get your presence known to. It might be the CEO, the COO, the VP of marketing, VP of sales, the CFO, because all you want to do is to get one of them to do the right thing. And the right thing is to take the email I've sent you that's intrigued you, because I've got a really strong cover note here, and do something with it. And that is either send it to the hiring manager who may have a job or may not, or send it over to talent recruitment so I get that exploratory conversation with them. But that's the, you know, kind of a piece, one of the, you know, the 13 what the hell moves, because you want to get people to behave in a way that gets you activity, and that will get you interviews, quite honestly.
Yeah, very good. So you're seeing that when people are being proactive with this, with a cover letter and a resume, without even there being a job listed, they're getting meetings. What are some of the aspects of the cover letter? I've met people who come to me after spending a half hour to 2 hours on cover letter submissions, especially with these online ads that we just said are useless. What are some of the key ingredients that makes for a compelling cover letter?
Yeah.
Get that exploratory conversation going.
Yeah. And I just want to be real clear. When I use the word cover letter, I mean email. Okay.
The email that a resume is attached to.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. What you've got to get really good at, okay, and this is part of my coaching, is you've got to be able to look at a job description. Let's just assume there is a job. And you got to be delineate what are the 4 most important requirements of this job. And quite honestly, they tend to sit right at the top of the description, because they're sitting up there because the reader, you know, the person who wrote it wants to make sure you read it.
Right.
Take those, identify them, put them into buckets. Okay. You got 4 buckets now. It might be lead generation, product management, new product launches, and international expansion. Okay. Now you've got to have a proof point under each one of those 4, an achievement. Something in your background that demonstrates that you've excelled in each one of those 4 areas. That is the guts of 80% of your cover letter, because now you've told the reader, I got it. I understand this job. And by the way, I've done things that you need that are in each of these 4 examples, and you're never going to list them all, you know, all out. And you know, this is a reason, and reason enough, for you to take the time to talk with me, because I'm somebody who's been there, done it, and done it well. And if people can get comfortable with doing that, and I've already, you know, created in my coaching a template so that people can literally write customized cover letters in 20 or 30 minutes. Mm. And this is really important in the job search, because there's 2 things that are important in a job search. One is speed. You got to move fast, because there's so many people out there looking, and customization. But the 2 very, very seldom come together. They are divergent. You can't be fast and customized. But with the approach that I've developed, you absolutely can. It should never take you more than 20 or 30 minutes to write a customized cover letter if you take the kind of approach that I've talked about, because you're going to build up a library of these proof points and categories.
Right. Yeah, it can come down to copy and paste. We have a very similar philosophy on this. I love it. What about when there's no job description to speak of, and you're talking about reaching out proactively?
Yep.
The companies on the target list to create those exploratory conversations. What are some key ingredients? You don't have to necessarily get with the verbiage unless you have ideas, but what are the key ingredients that cover letter will have, or that email will have, that will be compelling to the people in a company to have an exploratory conversation, something that isn't necessarily on their radar, isn't their top priority, maybe not be anything at all even that they're measured on.
Might not. And what I love about this approach, and it's worked for so many people that I've worked with, is that you're planting seeds. You're trying to plant an idea, a thought. And the fact is that the cover letter is not all that different from what I just described here. It's just the introduction that changes. Mm. My name is Marty Gilbert. I'm a marketing executive that has led teams both in the US and abroad, or whatever it is. Attach right. The copy of my resume. I'm writing to introduce myself because I am very interested in your firm XYZ, and I believe I can add value. And I realize you may not have a position today, but I just wanted to let you know about my background if and when an opportunity should arise. Okay. And then you move into your proof points, And then you sign it off and say, you know what, I welcome your thoughts and the opportunity to have a brief conversation. Regards.
So the proof points might be, here's three examples of the kinds of things I've accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you will have already built this out. And by the way, you're going to build out 10 or 12 of these modules that you can plug and play, which enables speed. And the fact is that when people get these kinds of emails, first of all, because nobody is doing them, it gets read.
Right.
They go, this person really has the initiative. They're proactive. They really want this company. They want to work here. Mm. And you know what? I respect that. You know, the reader respects that. And as a result, they are apt to take that and forward it on to somebody and say, you know what, this might be somebody you want to bring in or have a phone call with. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get that action. And this is when we talk about the hidden market, this is a big part of the hidden job market, but it's incumbent on the job seeker to make that action happen. And this is where I get, you know, disappointed with so many job seekers, because they are, you know, putting all their eggs into one basket, and that's the online ad. And this enables you to get into companies where nobody's going after them. There's no competition. You don't have to worry about a stack of 200 resumes to compete against, and you're first in.
Yeah, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And it does take a little guts for people to go for it, but I think you've encouraged us listening, and it's really great. Marty, let's talk a little bit about, let's say a candidate gets in the door. Now they go through the interview process. You know, I ask my guests on the podcast, what's the dumbest thing you've seen smart people do? And I'd love an example of where you've heard of someone who, without naming names, have really, you know, blundered, or, you know, like a really specific example, and then we can lead that into, you know, where do people generally fail during the job interview?
Yeah, I think one of the worst things you can do in an interview is to talk badly about the past. I mean, it just reflects so poorly on you. If you make any bad comments about the company that you worked at previously or the person you worked for, we've all been to this in the situation in social experiences where somebody says to you, oh God, I can't stand so-and-so. Well, you walk away from the conversation, I wonder what they're saying about me, okay? And you don't want to bring up bad stuff. Okay. Right. You always have to put a positive spin on this. And I've seen it with plenty of senior level people who just haven't gotten over the fact that they got let go. Right. And as a result, it's still sitting in their mind, and it's something that they bring to the forefront inadvertently. And it casts a bad cloud over the perception that they're trying to portray.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you said a key thing, they haven't gotten over that they got let go. One of the first things we need to do with people who feel they got a knife in their back is have them take the knife out, put the resentment behind them. Business is, you know, not always business as usual, and just find some other way of explaining why it didn't work out, taking some responsibility, moving on, and bringing the conversation to the future.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Anything else that you think, especially during the coronavirus, that job seekers can do to find, like, where are the better opportunities, and what can people do to find if the writing's on the wall, or if they find themselves out of work at a management level?
Yeah. I've developed a 60-minute webinar on, you know, 10 key tips to find your next job during COVID-19. And a lot of people have been applying this and it's working. I'll just share a few with you. Right. You know, first and foremost, you've got to have a marketing plan. Okay. The fact is that we've all worked in companies where there have been new products launched, new services launched, but we never introduce a product without first putting together an analysis or some sort of perspective on who's our audience, who are we selling these products and services to. The job search is no different. You now are the product. Right. Who is it you're trying to reach? And that's why I always go back to the target company list,
right?
Because it provides focus. It enables your network to help you, because if you can show them, hey, here's 30 companies I'm interested in, they, you know, you can go onto LinkedIn and see who's connected into those companies and who they're connected to. But you got to have an outbound marketing plan. And without it, you won't get traction, because minimally, you've got to be getting at least 5 profile views onto your LinkedIn profile, which means that number that sits, you know, on your homepage, it's got to be 450 or better, because it's a running 90-day number. If you're not getting that, you're just not drawing attention to yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is all about drawing attention to yourself. Right? So you got to have a marketing plan. You've got to have very strong branding. And if nothing else, just a branding statement. It's got to be something that differentiates you and lets people immediately know in 5 words or less, what you stand for, what, you know, what you are all about. Okay. Yeah. And your value proposition is then an extension of that. Yep. You know, that section that sits at the top of your resume and in the about section of your LinkedIn profile, you know, in 90 words or less, it's got to describe and answer the question, why you? Why you? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then you've got to be able to then, you know, we talked a little bit about the resume and the LinkedIn profile, but your LinkedIn profile has got to be optimized. You know, it's got to be search engine optimized and all based on keywords. So you've got to go through the process and come up with your bank of, I don't know, 15 or 20 keywords or key phrases. And they've got to be sprinkled throughout your resume. And one of the biggest mistakes people do, you know, in the headline area in your LinkedIn profile, underneath your photograph, if you enter it with an iPhone, you get 220 characters. If you enter it with an Android device or a laptop, you only get 120. But these have to be a string of keywords. And so many people confine themselves to their last title. I was VP of finance at XYZ company, and they stop. Oh my God, you've only used up about 1/4 of what, you know, LinkedIn is giving you. And if it's all about search and optimization, you've got to get more and more content in there and all throughout your LinkedIn profile, because recruiters are going in and hiring managers are going into the back end of LinkedIn. They're plugging in the keywords for the people that they're trying to find based on the skill set they're looking to fill a particular position. And if you don't have enough matches, you'll never rank high enough. You'll never be seen. And you might be the best candidate, but you won't show up, and you've got to. And I think the last thing that, you know, particularly relative to COVID, is that today with everybody working from home, they are far more reachable by phone. So many people don't pick up the phone. And the fact is that, you know, if you've got your target company list, okay, and you start calling into a company's main number, guess where that call is going to go? It's going to go to the automated system. They're going to ask you to insert, you know, the first three letters of the person's last name. You're going to put those in, and it's going to bounce over to the cell phones in their home where they're working. Guess what? You're going to reach that person so much more readily today than ever before. Mm-hmm. And so while COVID has some tremendous downside, this is one of the great upsides. People are far more reachable today because they aren't being interfered with by all the, you know, the water cooler talk, all these unnecessary conference meetings that we all, you know, fall slave to, the lunch hour in a cafeteria and other things. They're sitting in front of their laptops and their cell phones sitting next to them. So you can reach people by phone so much more readily today. And so when you send out an email, if you don't hear back within 3 days, you better be picking up that phone and calling them.
Really great advice. Really great views, Marty. A couple of personal questions I like to ask my guests. Okay. Any philanthropies or causes that you care about that you'd like to share?
You know, I was, you know, when I was in college, I always supported the Big Brother program. And, you know, throughout my, you know, my earlier days, I was very much into being a mentor for kids. And as a result, I did a tremendous amount of coaching when my own children were young. I coached baseball, travel teams, and basketball and soccer and things like that. And I loved it. It's probably one of the reasons why I've gravitated so much to this, because there is so much coaching and mentoring to what I'm doing today. I'm just doing it with a different age group. And so I am very supportive of, you know, of kids and helping them to, you know, make sure that, you know, they're moving in the right direction.
Nice. Very nice. And I'm a rock musician, so I like to ask, any favorite bands or artists?
I'm a big jazz and soul enthusiast. And so when people ask me, who is your favorite, you know, musician? Unquestionably, Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye, no question, was always my favorite vocalist, you know, even, you know, in his very early days with Tammy Terrell. He was a big, you know, influence on me. I just loved his style of singing and music. And I'll tell you the antithesis of that, the absolute opposite, who was also a favorite of mine, was Leon Russell. I grew up playing piano. Leon Russell, to me, was one of the most phenomenal piano players, and I just loved his voice, and of course that long silver hair. It just amazing. And I like those two in particular because they're sort of unsung heroes. They never really got to the level of notoriety that they could have, but what music they produced and their personalities, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm wearing red in the honor of Red Sox Nation.
And, there you go.
And hope the next year you and I will celebrate in New Orleans and check out some really good jazz and soul. And I thank you very much, Marty, for being our guest and for all your insights.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, John.
We'll put some of your resources in our program notes page so people can see your 10 ideas and anything else you want us to link to.
Yeah, and maybe one quick reminder to folks is that our website is nsenginc.com, nsenginc.com.
Okay,
appreciate
great.
The opportunity. Thank you.
All right, very good. Bye for now, Marty.
All right, take care, Jonathan.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the Career Transition Experts. Please make sure to listen to our next episode. And if at any time you want a clear view of the entire career transition process and a sense of where your strengths are and where your challenges are to work on, you'll get your free access to my career TPS assessment at careerexcitement.com. That's www.careerexcitement.com. TPS stands for Transition Performance Snapshot. This is Jonathan Flax wishing you outstanding career success and satisfaction in balance. Looking forward. Bye for now.